Welcome to Dialed Up, a podcast where we take the biggest problems facing agriculture, dial the volume up, and explore what's being done to fix them. I'm your host, Eleni Paulson. The problem? Sustainable farming needs more support. Last week, we started talking about crop insurance, how one facet of the U.S. government might be able to support sustainable farming initiatives, and what that could mean for the future of agriculture. When we left off, we heard about some of the problems with government support and why it's difficult to promote sustainable practices within the current crop insurance infrastructure. Now, let's consider the future of crop insurance. How might we lighten the load for food producers? In this episode, I'm going to pose two options detailing how I think we can better support sustainable farming. Now, this is from my point of view within the realms of my research. After this, we'll hear from the experts, who have a much better picture of what farmers really need in this space.
Just a couple of thoughts on this, Bill. We have asked our farmers in this country to produce more and more and more, and they've responded. But as we produce more, we see more and more of our soil going down the rivers. It used to be when we did conservation programs, it was to pay someone to take land out of production, CRP, things like that. But as we began to ask producers to produce more, we became very much aware of the fact that we needed conservation on working lands.
That was Iowa Senator Tom Harkin on a Congress committee for the Farm Bill in 2013. He's talking about conservation on working land, which can be supported by crop insurance. Crop insurance. It's big, it's messy, and it's government subsidized. How do I think it could be reformed? Let me tell you. I think our proposal for the next farm bill, and remember that's renewed every 5 years, could include support for sustainable farming in two different areas. We can expand conservation compliance to include more sustainable farming practices, or we could reward farmers that take advantage of organic farm insurance options. Or we could do both. But first, let's talk about conservation compliance. Conservation compliance requires producers to abide by certain conditions on any land owned or farmed that is highly erodible or that's considered a wetland. Farmers who don't abide by these policies are not given access to certain federal benefits. Now, we know that this program works. A recent study conducted by the USDA's Economic Research Service shows that conservation-compliant farms reduced soil erosion significantly between 1982 and 1997, and that's for both water and wind-related erosion. It's important to note that soil erosion rates on highly erodible cultivated cropland were largely unchanged between 1997 and 2012, though while this data seems old, it still does hold true through 2012. A portion of this study reads, "The strength of compliance incentives varies widely among farms because of the level of farm program benefits, and the cost of meeting compliance requirements vary between farms. Compliance incentives also depend on crop prices. Most commodity payments are triggered by low prices or low revenue. Crop insurance premium subsidies, on the other hand, rise with crop prices because higher prices increase the value of the insured crop." In other words, crop insurance subsidies rise with crop prices, so there's less variability in conservation benefits. Farmers who put the time, the money, the resources into conservation compliance are rewarded more consistently when the benefit is tied to crop insurance. Now, in 2014, compliance was coupled with crop insurance. So, what if we carry that a little further? What if we expanded these conservation practices to other sustainable farming practices, not just erosion and wetland? Right now, farmers on wetlands must develop a conservation plan with experts and have it reviewed and approved by the Natural Resources Conservation Service. What if we allowed farmers to receive insurance subsidies for NCRS-approved plans on water management, or biodiversity promotion, or overall soil health? Anti-pollution efforts for air, water, and climate. I'd argue these things are something to consider. Now, let's talk about that second option, rewarding sustainable farmers. Another thing that the government could do when it comes to crop insurance is reward the people that are already employing sustainable farming practices. We've already started doing that with organic crops in the United States. The Federal Crop Insurance Corporation does insure organic farmers, including certified organic acreage, transitional land being converted to organic land, and what's called buffer zone acreage. The FCIC, the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation, insures crops if the damage sustained is significant enough to lower your yield below the deductible for the entire insured unit. So if drought, excess rain, unseasonal freeze, storm damage, insect damage, disease, or weeds compromise your yield, you could be eligible to be covered. Coverage is available usually to small and large farmers alike. Right now, insurance price elections are available for 79 organic crops. As opposed to just 8 in 2014. That's due in large part to some funding provided by the 2014 Farm Bill for the Organic Data Initiative. We know that organic operations are rising in popularity and profitability. According to the U.S. Agriculture Census, there's been a clear rise in USDA-certified organic operations between 2002 and 2014, and a notable increase in both organic farms and sales between 2008 and 2019. In fact, the percent and volume changes year over year for organic produce alone are significant. The percent change in sales across the nation is no less than 10% year over year, with increases in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And the volume change is up 17% in some regions. Studies suggest that this trend isn't changing. According to a study conducted by Research Dive, the North America organics market accounted for $59,305.4 million in 2019, and that's predicted to rise with a compound annual growth rate of 13.1% between now and 2027. Increasing demand of organic food among the population is predicted to be the biggest driving factor for the global market in the estimated period. Now, let's let that sink in for a minute. And let's recognize that there are also opportunities to expand. Looking at the research, we found that some of the places with the highest increase in organic production and sales, like the South, have relatively little crop insurance coverage. There's a lot we can do to make sure farmers are covered for their organic acreage, and that they're encouraged to use subsidized crop insurance products to expand their organic offerings. Right now, several different entities collect data on organic farm production and pricing. That includes the USDA, the Economic Research Service, the National Agricultural Statistics Service, and the Agricultural Marketing Service, and that's just to name a few. There's the Certified Organic Annual Survey, the Organic Data Initiative, and Market News Reports. And legal blockages prevent the RMA, who manages crop insurance, from utilizing some of this information to expand its programming. So you've got several different entities collecting data on organic farm production and not one way to collaborate with all the entities. The risk management agency who manages crop insurance can't access all of that data all of the time. Even with organic price elections being available for 79 crops, there are still significant limitations on the availability of crop insurance for organic farmers across the country. The assessments available are likely not evaluating all the crops covered by federal crop insurance plans. This means that there are still individual crop policies available that don't offer an organic election to cover the full premium. Moreover, most individual crop policies are only available in a limited number of states. Now, that was a lot of industry speak, but all of that to say, popularity for organic crops is rising, and there's a lot we can do to better support it. Expanding our access to organic data means making crop insurance more available for organic farmers. Remember, the North America organics market accounted for $59,305.4 million in 2019 and is predicted to rise with a compound annual growth rate of 13.1% between now and 2027. I've jumbled my way through those numbers before, but it's worth hearing again. The 2014 and 2018 farm bills allocated money to collect research on organic farming. Now, we need a task force to make sure the research is being distributed appropriately, that it's making its way into insurance premium pricing models, that it continues to be funded as the organic farm market continues to grow, and that all of this information is also distributed and collected for use in supporting other sustainable farming initiatives. I was recently able to attend a webinar on just this topic. The webinar was called Climate Disruption, Agriculture, and Crop Insurance. What are the connections? It was hosted by the National Center for Appropriate Technologies, ATRA. ATRA is a sustainable agriculture information service that runs through a cooperative agreement with the USDA's Rural Business Cooperative Service. The presenter was Jeff Szyzinski. He's a natural resource economist and agricultural economist whose work includes publications and education on crop insurance, specifically with conservation in mind.
There is one product that I'll spend much more time on and the love of my life, so to speak, whole farm revenue protection, something I did work on for 17 years, and you'll figure that out why as I go along here. But it is the first crop insurance policy that's available in every county in the United States for any crops, which I'll get to. So I have this essential question, and this is now getting to the climate issues and disruption. Is the ability of farmers and ranchers to adapt to climate-friendly practices or systems of production primarily constrained by economic factors, including federal crop insurance subsidies and the financial risks of implementing different crops and practices and systems of production? And I take this from a great dissertation of a guy in Iowa. I think Iowa State 2017 is a reference. I draw heavily on this part from that work. It's great work. And I did look at some. There's a lot of research. Well, not a lot, but there's some. Most research on Midwest, first of all, when you ask this question, most of it is on commodity crops to begin with. We don't even talk about the apples and specialty crops in terms of that issue. Well, we might not be talking about it because, again, they don't get very good insurance, therefore nothing to investigate in terms of the influence of insurance over cropping choice, crop choices. Crop-specific subsidies significantly affect crop diversification. And I would say insurance too. Farmers respond to the incentive of lowering growing costs by replacing or lowering risks by replacing existing crops with the subsidized crops. Hence, corn and soybeans, mono and biculture, very much and reinforced by our current structure of crop insurance. By specializing, farms may be able to capture product-specific economies, but they may reduce their ability to manage risk or capture economies of scope. I'm not going to get into the economic difference of scale, of economies of size and scope, but there is a distinction, an important one. Scope has to do more to do with diversifying your risk across the enterprise, and economies of scale, as it implies, has to do with that your costs are distributed over a higher volume. And we have captured in a lot of our commodity crops, most of the economies of size, and this may be reinforced by crop insurance. Crop insurance likely changes land use, more marginal land. It's a debated issue and a lot of some differing things on that, but it's definitely worth more research. And again, that could have climate implications. We could be breaking out more land, releasing the carbon sequestrated in the soil if crop incentives are going the wrong way. And this is just a very specific thing of this guy's research. My results also confirm federally subsidized crop insurance as the primary source of a farmer's coping capacity. Whew. Now, if that's true, and the incentives are to grow more monocultures, and the only way I can cope is my revenue insurance, am I getting trapped and not being able to challenge and adapt to the future of climate disruption? So whole farm revenue is my solution. And I like it because, and I liked it since 18 years ago or 17 years ago when I started this whole thing. It ensures the whole farm's revenue based on the average of your revenue history, not your yield history. It's basically saying, farmer, rancher, grow what is most profitable for you, or combinations of the way you want to grow, besides and mitigate your risks by either growing more or different complements of crops, and then we'll just protect you because because it's risky. We know agriculture is risky, but we're going to protect you. But we're going to protect, in a sense, your revenue or your income, and it covers both those things that affect your yield, both price and yield. It improves the subsidies, improve incentivizes as you have more, you get a higher level of cup, you have possibility of higher level of coverage, and more products. Premium rates, cost of the thing lowers with each added product up to 7. They kind of stop at 7. I'm never really quite sure. I guess after that, 9, 10, 11, it's kind of moot in terms of the difference, I guess, or they just arbitrarily pick 7. And it covers, again, every county, every place, and really almost every single kind of crop in livestock. You can, if you don't have it on the list, you just say other crop and you can insure it. That'll cause your cost to go up, but anyway, and it does have a limit in terms of coverage, which is still pretty high, and this is used by a lot of different and also for organic, it incorporates, because your history is organic, your values are incorporated in your history. It's a really cool product. And here's some research we did, great study of 5 years, is organic farming risky? Great study, 160 some pages, excellent work, couple published papers. I love it. But this gives you a sense of the different crops, and really 165 distinct products were covered with this one policy. And you can see that some policies that you wouldn't even expect are dominant. Apples, that's a whole story in itself. We can't go into it. Someday I could tell you more about that one. But you can see that there are a lot of commodity crops in there too. Quick thing to show it works. This is a made up Vermont Bennington County. County is the unit of analysis. Organic farm, because that's my favorite. Apples, beets, carrots, cipollini, and eggs. It's a cool thing about a whole farm. It also creates livestock products, because again, we're not caring about what you grow and whether you're livestock or not. We're really talking about, you know, all of it in terms of its value. And so this is what they expect to produce. And you can see that their historic 5-year average, 170. So they think they're going to do a little bit better in average in the coming year, or this last year. And the premium for this would have been $13,000 to cover that $170,000. Well, it's actually a little bit less because it's only 85% of that. And the premium is, it's pretty good subsidy there. Good subsidy for it. Again, it kind of gives us overview, expected revenue. Let's say they had a 50% loss. This is just showing how it paid out. That 144 is the 85, 172. You get indemnity payment of 58. So you made 86, you get 58 from the insurance. But you got to put in the cost of the insurance. Your actual net revenue is 138. So basically this guy, by taking the insurance, recovered about 80% of their revenue. Now, this doesn't work the same for every single example. I can contrive the example to make it look better or worse. And so you really have to run through your with your insurance agents, your specific history, your specific complements. This is just an example. But what's also really important, and that's why there's not much crop insurance sold in the New England areas, is that the only alternative for insuring those crops besides whole farm revenue would have been apples. And that's a yield-only policy. It doesn't even include revenue. So without whole farm revenue, there wouldn't really be much insurance available. And since whole farm revenue has its own problems, which they aren't still using it very much, they have figured out to mitigate risk without insurance. And diversity matters. If I were to take that same farm and reduce it to only 3 products, apples, beets, and eggs, the premium would increase. Makes sense, not putting all your eggs in one basket. So if there are less eggs, you know, it could break the eggs more. Anyway, you get a 16% premium. That isn't a uniform discount over every system. It depends on the crops you're talking about. But in this case, it does move towards discounting for diversity. So conclusions and conjectures. Crop insurance is highly subsidized. So in thinking about the future, some people say, well, we could just, you know, they use cover crops, we can lower their premiums, or we can improve their coverage. Well, you're getting really good insurance already, and the marginal ability to motivate behavior change by just adjusting premiums or those things, I have my questions about whether that will be useful. Also, system change may be necessary, polycultures. And current crop insurance programs maintain the current system. It kind of the nature of the beast. It's based on history, therefore it wants to push the history to the present. But we need, with climate disruption and erratic weather events and those things, we need a more resilient systems, and yet we're enforcing mono or bicultures and using a lot of public dollars to do that. Too good crop insurance, like revenue protection, and it's really good insurance. I can explain why if anybody wants to ask me. Can also do this marginal land, again, with implications. This whole good farming rule makes adoption of new climate-friendly practices systems difficult. I would argue that there needs to be a change in that definition so that we can actually encourage innovation rather than not. Equitable distribution. The benefits seem skewed in a direction that may not support climate adaptation because it's going to the bioculture and monoculture collapse that are kind of embedded in a system that makes change difficult. And that's reinforcing the inability to change. Whole farm offers a financial system for this diversity. And it, I think perhaps what might be a way to build more resilient farms based on just crop diversity alone, crop and livestock diversity alone. Whole farm may be particularly beneficial to organic farms. Again, more organic farms are growing crops that aren't covered, and they also, in my opinion, tend to build more resilient systems because of the diversity and use of cover crops and other practices that others are trying to adopt these days. My personal vision, so I'm taking my hat off as an employee, but something from 18 years, I think a reformed, and there are problems with whole farm revenue, don't get me wrong, there's many problems with it, and we have tried very hard for many years to improve it, and we're making slow incremental progress on that, but I wish it would become the dominant form of insurance. I believe it would lead to the kind of resilient systems we need, and it would actually, I haven't proved this yet by research, but I think it would lead to less total public expense for our crop insurance program. We need a whole farm and other conservation programs incentivizes farmers to adopt certified organic systems. I think that and beyond, organic systems are a direction that have an inherent great kind of climate resilience, and we need the kind of programs and insurance that supports that direction.
Now, these are options for increasing resources in the sustainable farming space. And yeah, they might be effective. However, there is one glaring issue with crop insurance in general. It's a defensive strategy. Protecting farmers if something goes wrong is what crop insurance does best. As grower Mitchell Hora mentioned in episode 2, sustainable farming cannot be a defensive strategy. It should be an offensive farming technique, something that allows us to prevent problems rather than recover from them. How can we be more forward-thinking in our support for sustainable practices? Well, that may not come in the form of crop insurance, but that doesn't mean the government can't or shouldn't be involved. Next week, we'll talk about that. What exactly can the government do to help farmers proactively adopt sustainable practices? And how do those systems, the defense of crop insurance and the offense of other government support, work in tandem to create a wider safety net for agriculture? More on that next week. Thanks for listening to Dialed Up.